All right, welcome everyone to another edition of Natural Dog Blog Radio on naturaldogblog.com. It's Neil Satin speaking with you, and today I have a special guest, Sang Ko, who is here with me live from Seattle, right?
Somewhere yep, that's right. Seattle. Yep,
and,
close enough.
Some of you probably know that I'm in Maine, so we're talking to you from opposite corners of the country here, which means it's getting close to my bedtime, so I'll try to stay peppy for you.
Yeah, I'll try not to keep you up too late, Neil.
Thanks, Sai. And thanks for agreeing to get on with an interview. It was kind of an interesting chain of events where I had actually been thinking about us getting on the line anyway to talk and really give a more thorough introduction of you to the people who read Natural Dog Blog or participate in the forums there or who have seen you, you know, on some of the other natural dog training sites. And then, sure enough, one of the other contributors to the forum on Natural Dog Blog was like, hey, Neil, have you thought about interviewing Sang? He seems like a really interesting guy. So
I'm glad someone thinks so.
Yeah, well, that makes at least two of us, plus your wife. So I'm sure she likes you too. So, and soon it will be thousands upon thousands of listeners.
Great.
So anyway, I really appreciate your being here tonight.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't we get started by just your talking a little bit about how you got into natural dog training to begin with and maybe how you found me, and we'll take it from there.
Sure. That sounds like a good place to start. So it's actually pretty interesting how I got into it because I got into it indirectly. My wife, Amanda, actually, she was on a trip to in Colorado. She was actually doing a mural for someone. And, you know, there's a long whole story to that, and there's all this history to that. But long story short is things didn't quite work out. But she ended up adopting this puppy while she was there, who we still have. Her name is Delta, and she's now about 7 years old. And the woman she adopted her from gave her a copy of Kevin's book and essentially told her, this is the only training book you'll ever need. And she said, and she made her promise to send it back to her when she was done reading it because at the time it was out of print. So we had this book in our house and, you know, but at the time, you know, it was like, oh, this is Amanda's dog. You know, I'm not going to get involved. You know, it's her dog and she should take care of her and do all the training and all that stuff. And she was following the basic rules of raising a puppy as prescribed by Kevin. But then she did end up reading it and then sending the book back. And then, you know, a few years later, we decided to get another dog. So this is how we got our second dog, Jackie. And because we had the two now, we felt like, well, we should probably train them and, you know, two's a lot more work than one, and so we decided it'd be a good idea. The responsible thing to do as dog owners is to train both of them. And, you know, but the time had passed and it had been so long that, you know, the whole natural dog training thing and everything was totally out of our spectrum. It had just, we actually kind of forgot about it. Mm-hmm. And we were living in Detroit at the time, and we found this trainer who was, you know, he was kind of like a local celebrity. You know, everybody wanted to hire him, and you know, and so we thought, well, this guy must be good, right? Because you know,
is this the dude who was on Letterman that you told
yes.
me about?
Yes, yeah, okay. That's him. I mean, the guy was hilarious, right? I mean, he's got so much personality, and honestly, I really like the guy. You know, so you know, this is like what I'm about to say about him is not a criticism of him. You know, because I really like him, and but he was a dominance-based trainer, and so that was actually my first full-on experience in the dog training world. You know, my whole initial dog training philosophy was sort of based on that paradigm of the whole dominance model. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it was beautiful. It worked, right? I mean, it was like he comes in, from the first moment, he's, being the authority figure. And he's, he starts working with them and, he's got them walking on leash really nice and all this stuff that you think would be required of having a trained dog. It happened fast. Everything seemed to come together super quickly. It was like, great, our dogs are trained, right? Mm-hmm. And that was only over the course of like a few weeks. And it seemed like the dogs were great. And we could take them places and they were, quote, behaved. and then a little while after that, and this is where everything changed, because a little while after that, we were at an adoption fair. And we're just walking around. We're like, oh, we'll just go. We've never been to the adoption fairs. We'll just go look and see what it's about. But we're not going to bring home a dog. That was like what we said before going there. So we're walking around, and then, there's all these different dogs, beautiful dogs that are up for adoption. And we happen to stumble across this one. And it's this little white terrier mix. And again, to make a long story short, we did end up bringing her home. And from the moment we took her out of the crate, I mean, she was like this ball of fire. You open the crate, you pull her out. I mean, she's just all over the place. I mean, she's on a leash, so we could take her for a little walk around the facility. But she is just, just on, right? But having worked with the dominance training and all that stuff, we're thinking, oh, we can tame her,
Well, just take a couple of weeks, right?
Right, exactly. Put a prong collar on her. Everything will be great. but being the feisty terrier that she is, that didn't go over so well with her. and it started. It developed into all kinds of dysfunctional behavior. And I can't specifically say that the training we did with her was necessarily the only reason she ended up becoming as dysfunctional as she was. She did have her own issues, and she was a sheltered dog, so we don't know her history and, and what her experiences were as a puppy and all that. So we may have just been triggering things from our past. But nevertheless, it certainly didn't help. She became dog aggressive. She started becoming more and more fearful of humans and human aggressive as well. And, at that point was when we, realized that whatever we're doing is just, this isn't working, right? Because she would initiate fights with our other dogs. There was our household was just chaos. It was full of stress. You just never knew when it was going to blow up. There was blood, the whole nine yards. It was, to put it bluntly, just really sucked, right? All of a sudden having dogs was not a pleasant experience. And that went on for a while. And and of course, like a lot of people, I was kind of caught up in the whole Cesar Millan thing. It seems so sexy and glamorous. It's like, oh, you can, if you just do what Cesar does, then the dogs will settle down, and maybe he could do it, but, I certainly didn't have the, whatever you want to call it that Cesar has, and applying that philosophy and those techniques only exacerbated the problem. So I came to this realization that I don't know what I'm doing. And so, I think I'm just not going to do anything. Since what I'm doing is only making things worse, it will probably actually be better if I did nothing at all. And that actually was true to some extent.
That's some pretty sound logic, actually.
What's that?
I said that's some pretty sound logic.
Yeah. You know, being the designer and deductive reasoner that I am, you know, it's like, oh, well, if this isn't working, I probably shouldn't do it, right? So basically I just stopped. You know, we basically just said, okay, you know, no more input, no more training. You know, this is just making things worse. And things actually started settling down on their own just from that alone, just from backing off. The dog started getting along more, you know, the house was more peaceful. But there was still that underlying tension of you just never know when something was going to blow up. Mm-hmm. And occasionally it still would. And of course, taking Roxy anywhere was still quite an adventure, to say the least. So, you know, I think it was January of 2008 when I finally called Kevin. I'd been intending to do that for quite some time, but just for all kinds of reasons, you know, I'll just call them excuses. I never got around to it. But then there was one incident where the dogs got into another fight and we tried to break it up, and I put my hand in where I shouldn't have put it and got a nice big gouge on my right arm, which I still have the scar from, so it's always a nice reminder to have that.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, that was when I was finally like, you know, we need to do something. We need to be proactive about this, but we can't go back to what we were doing because that didn't work. And, you know, and at that period of time, I had actually gotten back into the natural dog training stuff because I can't remember even how exactly the book came back into my consciousness. But I ended up ordering a copy through Amazon because it had been put back into print, and started reading it. And it was like I was now ready to absorb it. Because once I started reading it, then it all just started making sense. I didn't know how to apply it in a tangible way, but what Kevin was saying in his book all made sense as how it was applying to our dog's group dynamic and how everything was playing out, and you know, just the stress overload and just all the things that were going on. But then it wasn't until after Roxy bit me in the arm that I finally decided to actually put the wheels in motion and get in touch with Kevin, which was January of 08, which is when I finally called him up and talked to him. Mm-hmm. And the things he had to say was just like, you know, it was like an hour-long conversation, and I was like copiously taking notes, trying to remember everything he was telling me. And I remember I still have the notepad where I have all these like just random notes that now, you know, it's like if I go back through it, it really makes no sense because everything is just scattered all over the place. But I always remember having that conversation with him, and it was just, you know, it was just eye-opening, and everything I thought I knew was no longer relevant. And it was like the beginning of having to unlearn everything I'd already learned. Mm-hmm. So that I could be open to learning what he had to teach. And after that moment, I just, you know, I realized that I wanted to spend time with him in person, just like yourself. You know, I realized that the only way I'm really going to get the most out of this was to spend time with the guy. But that didn't happen for quite a while. You know, again, life gets in the way. And but then there are other circumstances that were happening in my life that finally triggered me to, and pushed me to go and actually do it. So at that point, you know, got back in touch with Kevin, and we set up a time to do it. Packed up the three dogs, got in the van, and drove all the way to Vermont from Seattle. It was quite a nice, interesting journey on the way out. You know, with two dogs that are cool, and one dog that's, you know, triggered to react by everything you drive by. I'll sitting in the back of the van, and spent a month there. And needless to say, it was
summer, right?
Yeah, it was summer of 2009, and again, it was a life-changing experience, to say the least. And the amazing thing was that the things I took away from that experience, you know, yes, I learned about dogs and dog, quote, training and all those things, but the thing I took away was this discovery of myself. You know, it was one of those experiences that where I had all these self-realizations about so much of the things that I had been experiencing in the past, and coming to terms with the fact that everything my dogs were doing were just mirroring what I'm experiencing and what I'm feeling that I wasn't even aware of, just totally opened up my world and made me see things I never saw before. And to make that kind of connection was just, you know, I mean, it was something that I can't put a price on, you know, it was just priceless, because it was just, like I said, I was going through some things in my life, personal things in my life at that time. And it was exactly the experience I needed to help unlock that door, where, because I had all this, to borrow a natural dog training term, I had all this stuck energy that wasn't moving, and I needed to move it, and spending time there helped me finally get it moving again. So that's kind of my long-winded way of sharing how I got to natural dog training.
Yeah, and I just kind of quickly switched over to my email. I have emails from, like, decades ago. Well, not really decades ago, but actually, I probably do have emails from decades ago. But the very first email you sent me was on January 5th of 2008.
Yeah, it was... It's funny because at that time I was like, you know, I was just like, okay, we're doing it, you know. I was just like, you know, I got in touch with you and I got in touch with Lee, you know, because I was just so focused on trying to understand how natural dog training works, because there was something about it that resonated with me so much that I just knew it would be the thing that helped me and our dogs get to where we needed to go to help resolve these things. And what's funny is that your website or your forum had been online a bit longer than when I finally jumped back into it.
Mm-hmm.
But then once I needed it, it was like, oh, it just kind of showed up. And then that's when I got in touch with you guys. I was like, you know, I'm just going to get as much information from all the people I can, which was basically just the three of you guys, and just try to assemble it and make some sense of it. Because, you know, and I have to admit, and Kevin will even admit this, that, you know, when I spoke with him, it, even though what he was sharing with me, it really resonated and made sense, on some level, I was still a bit lost, you know, and And having the resources of you and Lee available, you guys really helped me bring it down to earth, so to speak, to where I could sort of find my, and navigate my way and relate back and forth between what Kevin has shared with me and then what you guys were sharing and putting out there. And then, basically just making it a lot more tangible so that when I would refer back to the bigger picture stuff that Kevin was telling me about, then it started to click.
Yeah, when I think back on some of my initial motives behind starting Natural Dog Blog, it was, well, one big thing was simply having something that I could refer clients to after lessons so that, you know, they had a way to take the tons of information that I had just kind of thrown at them in our lessons and actually revisit it in a manner that helped them really integrate the information with what they were doing with their dogs. So mm-hmm. that was the first thing. And then the second thing was, you know, on a larger scale, because recognizing that once it was on the internet, people other than my clients were probably going to stumble upon it one way or another, which it's kind of funny to think back on that now, but one thing that I realized when I worked with Kevin, because I had an experience similar to yours where I read his book a couple times and was having some luck implementing what was there, but it was really working with him that made things gel for me. And, mm-hmm. and I realized that there was potential for someone out there to really articulate things in a bit more of a layman's terms, I guess, for lack of a layperson's terms. So that was what I saw my initial mission as being, was sort of like translator for Kevin.
Right.
And it was that for a while, you know, and then it happens with anything that anyone does, you do it long enough and you start to have your own ideas about something. So, but yeah, so, you know, I appreciate your saying so, and that was ultimately my goal a lot of the time, was just like to take things that otherwise could seem kind of esoteric or metaphysical or whatever, and just kind of make it practical for people, because that other stuff is very useful and is equally life-changing. But sometimes when someone's just like, you know, I think your first question to me was, do you feel like the dog should always be by your side focusing on you when you go through on a casual walk through the neighborhood? I mean,
right.
That's
mm-hmm.
like, that's a real question that needs a real answer. You know, and
mm-hmm.
So anyhow, that's how my site sort of came into existence. But it's been nice to have Kevin and Lee out there being vocal, and now that you've also become more present in terms of giving people your own insight, it's actually nice to not be in a vacuum, you know, and to have that counterpoint of ideas being exchanged and some more people who, you know, have a sense of what they're talking about to keep the conversations moving forward. So that's been mm-hmm. really good. Plus,
yeah, definitely.
As you know, as you and I spoke about earlier, you know, there are ways that, you know, sometimes someone will hear something from me and it might not make sense, and then they hear it from Lee and it makes perfect sense, or they hear it from me, it makes perfect sense, it didn't make sense when they heard it from Kevin, or, you know, however. So having you be able to, again, articulate the, you know, what you do and how you've made natural dog training your own is, I think, going to be equally as important for people out there to have more perspective on how to make it practical for them.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, for people who are listening, there have been times, actually quite frequently, when Sang has been more present on the forum on my site than I've been, and you know, and I've seen many people just really be really clearly helped by the feedback that you've been able to give them. So I'll give you a thank you right now for being like that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I enjoy doing it because I know what it's like. You know, I've been there. It's, you know, your dog's doing things that you just, you know, just aren't making your life very pleasant. No, and it can be such an unsettling experience, and you can be so lost and so confused with this barrage of information that exists in the world, and you know, you can, you know, if I can just help one or two people that are feeling what I felt, and I remember it like it was yesterday, that feeling of helplessness, then it's all worth it.
Well, then it's all worth it, because I know you've already helped at least one or two people. So at this point, everything else is just going to be gravy at this point.
Right, cool.
Speaking of making things practical, you know, maybe you could share kind of the top, let's just choose arbitrarily the top three, but if you had to identify specific techniques or things that you did with Roxy, I'm presuming that she was like the bulk of what you focused on, because mm-hmm. she was kind of your problem child.
Yeah.
Talk about the top three techniques that you've implemented with her, and in any way that makes sense for you to talk about those things, and you know, maybe give people who are listening with aggressive dogs some sense of, you know, what might work for them.
Sure. Well, the one of the biggest things that, and one of the biggest shifts I saw was once she started really getting into the pushing exercise. You know, that, you know, for all the people who are listening who follow natural dog training, we all know that that's like the fundamental exercise that we all do. And that exercise alone gave me access to things with her that nothing else did. When she would get into those tirades of aggression and rage, and you know, we'd be, for example, out on a walk somewhere and see another dog, and the dog didn't have to be, you know, just 5 feet away. The dog could be just in sight. The dog could be like 30 yards away, and she would start going into overload. In the past, there was nothing that could take her out of that state. And I tried all kinds of things. But once we started getting into the pushing stuff, things really shifted, where she could start to feel me when she would get energized like that. Then I started having some control. You know, I had leverage. And that was something that I never had before with her. And now, even more so. So, you know, that exercise alone, if there's only one thing you focus on, that's the biggest thing to focus on. Because once you get that going, everything else starts to unfold. Once you get the dog's energy moving through the pushing, then they give you so much more.
Now, was Roxy a natural at pushing from the beginning?
She actually was. She is the one, I should say. If I have to categorize her of all the dogs, she's the one who's probably got the most desire and the biggest heart. I mean, you know, which is also the reason why her dysfunctional behaviors are so intense too. But you know, from the beginning, you know, it didn't take long for her to start pushing pretty well, you know, and it wasn't even like I really tried hard with her. It was a pretty gradual build up. You know, I actually just started feeding her by hand and then slowly built up to the pushing. And it was only like a week before she started doing it, like full on doing it. So, you know, whereas the other two dogs were a lot more resistant, and they took a, it was harder for them to get going on it. But Roxy was, you know, yeah, she was pretty open to it, actually.
Well, it sounds like if she was on fire, as you say, then she already had a lot of energy at the surface and just needed a way to focus that energy that felt good to her.
Yeah, because that's the thing with her is her energy is always at the surface. You know, she's not one to suppress it. She's definitely one to show you what's going on internally. So it wasn't hard for her to start channeling that once she knew what to channel it into. She definitely has her deep-seated issues that require a little bit more work to get those to the surface, but definitely overall she's got the most energy to give. You know, and you see it everywhere. I mean, when you compare her to our other two dogs, whenever you're doing any exercises, I mean, she's just full bore into it, and which is what makes her, you know, how can I put it? I have a real soft spot for her because of that.
Yeah, well, she's like she embodies passion, and I imagine that someone with an artistic side like you have, that would speak to something deep in you. I mean, it's no coincidence that you married an artist too, so.
Yeah, that's true.
And you mentioned something that I think is worth highlighting, which is that, it's actually two things. The first being that that Roxy had all this energy and she simply needed to learn a way of focusing or channeling that energy that made sense and felt good and was gratifying, as opposed to just, you know, throwing it out haphazardly at the world. And that's really what the pushing exercise does. And on top of that, you mentioned that you could finally access what her in some of those what would have before been completely stressed out, and you know she would have been gone and completely disconnected from you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one thing that pushing gives people really quickly, although you have to be paying attention to see it, is it makes your dog a lot more flexible in terms of their emotional interaction with the world. So you don't have just like 0 and 100 miles per hour, that you start creating this dynamic range where they start to experience more subtleties of emotion. And it's that flexibility and those subtleties that give you an entree, really, I think, into your dog's emotional world before they shut you out.
Yeah, absolutely. Their emotional flexibility expands so much once they start going through this exercise, you know? And just their ability to handle stress or input or anything that would traditionally knock them off balance, you know, and it increases so much, you know. And some dogs take longer than others, of course, but all dogs benefit from it.
So getting back to the initial question, top three techniques, we've talked about
mm-hmm.
one. What else would you highlight?
The other thing, and I don't know if this is really a technique so much as it is one of the things that we do in natural dog training to sort of, I don't know, help behaviorally challenged dogs, is the addiction or attention diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a dog that does have a lot of neurotic behaviors or aggression issues or fear issues, you know, I think the natural tendency is to coddle them, especially dogs that are fearful, or to do a lot of, you know, if you want to call it positive stuff with them or pet them or basically just give them a lot of attention, thinking that we're helping them or comforting them, you know. But the thing I've learned through all of this, you know, is that all those experiences are just adding fuel to the fire. You know, the dog is inherently unbalanced, in an unbalanced state, and any kind of attention we put on him is just building on top of that already weak foundation. So he doesn't have the emotional flexibility yet or a strong emotional foundation yet to be able to handle that kind of input. And so when we give the dog attention, even if he's just hanging around the house, you know, we're still feeding the cracks in the foundation, you know. And so it's really a test of your own willpower to just essentially leave your dog alone, really. You know, that the only time you really give them any kind of attention is when you're working with them and helping them resolve their issue. You know, it's that thing of, you know, who are you really doing this for? Are you doing this for you or for the dog? You know, because if you're in it just for yourself, then, you know, then your tendency is to just, oh, well, he looks so cute, you know, oh, I want to give him some loving, you know, and we all fall victim to that. You know, it's a dog, he's cute, right? but we always have to keep in mind the greater good of what we're trying to accomplish. And, you know, if you had a child who, you know, are you going to be the parent or your child's buddy? You know, sometimes you have to make the choices that may not necessarily feel good in the moment, but ultimately help you to build a foundation that will allow healing to happen. You know, and once the dog gets through his issues and there's resolution, yeah, you know, then he can handle that kind of stuff. But until he's there, you know, you have to have the inner strength to just back off. You know, just let him be. You know, and I think that's something that's really difficult for most dog owners to do, is to give their dog that kind of freedom, really, to just live in the, you know, to be by themselves for a bit. You know, they don't need the kind of attention that we put on them. And that was definitely a, you know, one of the more difficult lessons to totally embody, you know, because it's very easy to go right back to that pattern of, oh, you know, she seems to be doing better today, you know, so maybe I could give her a little pet, you know, give her some pets and and hugs or whatever, you know. Yeah, but it's definitely challenging. So,
yeah, I think that's definitely a hard lesson for people to get, because, you know, the reason people get dogs a lot of the time, it's probably not fair to generalize like this, but is because they need something in their lives. And mm-hmm. the dog fills that need. And something that I address in the Daily Om course that I just released, and which you can probably relate to since you're in that strategic intervention training with mm-hmm. me, is to examine the needs behind why you have your dog, why you work with your dog, why you play with your dog, and to maybe make some shifts in terms of what needs of yours you're actually fulfilling. And if you make the right shift, then it's not so much of a challenge to give your dog some space because you recognize that that's the best thing for your dog. But
right.
if you're relying on your dog for your own need to connect with another being or need to feel wanted or special or desired, then you're putting a burden on your dog that they're not really prepared to handle. Some rock solid dogs, they don't care. They'll show up for that no matter what. But but take a dog with an unstable foundation, like we've been talking about, and you know that just can knock things way off kilter.
Yeah, and you know, and it doesn't take a lot. You know, they're so emotionally unstable that the slightest little thing can really knock them off balance, and that's not really fair to them. You know, but just like you said, it's that self-reflection and going deeper into understanding yourself, you know, because dogs really do reflect so much of who we are that if we don't understand the reasons why we're doing things to begin with, then, you know, then we can't really take that, we really can't step back to really see what's going on. To see what the best thing to do is for the situation, and again, dogs show us so much of what we need to see about ourselves that, you know, if you just pay attention to what they're telling you or showing you, then it can really open up your world to self-discovery that, you know, that so many people strive for, but you know, which is a really fascinating topic in and of itself. But you just have to be open to seeing that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, so now we've covered two. Can you think of a third? We've got pushing, we've got the attention diet.
And the third thing would actually be the whole notion of doing all these things in a environment that's outside the context of everyday life, right? So, you know, typically, you know, when you do training, you think, oh, well, you know, train them in a low distraction environment, like inside the house, or, you know, we'll do this stuff in the house or in the backyard. But in natural dog training, we always focus on working outdoors. You know, everything happens outdoors, whether it's the actual training or the play or any of those things. And the further away from home, the better. You know, if you can find a nice spot that's, you know, a nice spot of grass or just a nice field or anywhere that's kind of natural, it can just be like a schoolyard, anything. But working within that context and focusing all your work in those areas, you know, is you know, you can totally see the difference when you do that, like versus working within the confines of your own household. You know, and that is, again, that is something that really requires someone to commit to the process, because it, for a lot of people, it isn't always easy to find a spot like that to work. You know, I know even my house, we don't even have like a yard or anything. So it's, you know, in order to duplicate that type of environment, you know, I have to actually take them someplace to work with them in that manner. You know, and it can be challenging sometimes, but the benefits from doing that are quite amazing. You can see the shift when you work with your dog in that context versus just working with them in the backyard, for example. You know, even though the backyard is outside, it's still not you know, you just don't see as much from your dog as you do if you work with them in a totally different new environment.
I think from my perspective, that's for a few reasons. One is that most people in their backyard, they just don't have enough space to, like, have a full-on run, for instance, without, mm-hmm. like, you know, running smack into a fence before they've gone too far. So you know, while you don't necessarily have to be on a in a 10-acre field, like where I shot the DVDs, being in a large enough space that really allows you some range of motion is really helpful. And also, home has, you know, that everyone's comfortable there. So if you're trying to break patterns with a dog or with yourself, because often, of course, our own patterns are at the root of what's going on with our dogs, then it can be helpful, I think, to be in a in an environment that's at least not near your center of being or your like your emotional center of gravity. It's like probably, you know, rooted in your body and then kind of generalized to your home, the spaces where you're most comfortable. And then the further you get from there, the more you have the chance to do something new, to be something new. And I mean, if I'm just kind of speaking off the cuff about, you know, that, that topic, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that.
Well, it's so true, you know, the, because the dog is always shifting who he is based on who you are, and getting yourself out of the confines of your normal environment, you know, there's a part of you that literally becomes a different person, you know, and you can feel that, and of course your dog is going to feel that too, you know, and when you're in this new environment, and whether the new environment makes you feel good or maybe makes you feel a little unsettled because it's this place you haven't been before, it still is a change. It still forces you to shift. And that shift is exactly, of course, what the dog needs as well, to shift into a new paradigm, you know, especially if you have a dog that's dealing with a lot of emotional issues. You know, having those new environments, those new experiences where, you know, where you're feeling the newness of it, and then, of course, the dog's mirroring that, it just opens up a... It opens both of you up to learning a new way of being, which, of course, is what we're striving for with our dogs, is to help them overcome whatever obstacles they have and taking them to a place that puts it, puts them in a new context, helps them do that. Whereas I tend to find that if you just continue to do things in the normal old pattern and routines, it's just like, you know, you get stuck in that pattern, you get stuck in that energy, and you just can't move forward. But taking it to a new place, it it automatically forces you to do that because it's, well, it's a new place. You know, so you're instantly out of your normal comfort zone.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I'm wondering if another thing that's hasn't exactly been mentioned explicitly, but it's obvious to anyone listening to this conversation, which is you have more than one dog. I'm wondering if you have some thoughts on doing natural dog training when you have a multiple dog household and how you've been able to make that practical for yourself.
Well, the thing that I found is that, you know, for my situation is, you know, the focus has been on our most emotionally challenged dog, Roxy. So most of the energy goes into working with her. And so I spent most of my time getting my feet wet, so to speak, and finding my comfort level and confidence working with her, and then applying that to the other two dogs. They're, you know, they have their own unresolved issues, but they're not... They are not and never had been to the level that Roxy was. I mean, she's just, everything is still on the surface. The other two were, you know, they get along with people great, you know, they're cool with other dogs. So, but Roxy was, had always been the one that needed the most help. So she's been the primary focus. having said that, you know, there is definitely a difference when you have a group dynamic. Now, when you're working with any one of the three dogs individually, then it's much easier to work with them. You know, whether you're out at the park somewhere or on a walk or even just in the backyard doing whatever. But when you have the three of them together and one of them gets triggered by something, say the UPS truck or someone knocking at the door, then as Kevin likes to refer to it, you know, they get their batteries linked up, and then all the energy gets combined together, and it's they all gel into like this one dog basically. and when they're at that intense high energy level, you know, trying to get them to engage with you can be challenging. So what I found works best is, you know, I don't worry so much about the other two and focus on Roxy because she's always my focus. So if the other two, let's say, again, use like the UPS truck example. Let's say the UPS truck pulls up and they get excited, then my focus becomes Roxy and to get her to feel me, because then I can actually use this as a leveraging point so that, you know, when all three are going into overload and barking and doing all their dog things, then I can actually use that to my advantage so that I can work with Roxy within the context of this intense energy level, knowing that, well, I can get her formatted, so to speak, so that when there are other situations where we're out and about and she goes, starts feeling that unsettling, starts going into overload, she can feel me, you know, because ultimately I know that down the road, all these issues can be resolved. This is all solvable. So I don't need to worry about the other two so much, you know, and in fact, ideally, you know, I would, if, you know, in an ideal situation, then I would keep the dogs isolated anyway, which would be the ideal situation, but that's not always the case. So when those moments do occur, then, you know, I can actually use that to help solve Roxy's problem. You know, even though, yes, the other two dogs are, you know, they're getting unsettled and they're, you know, barking up a storm. But, you know, that actually...
What do you notice about what they do in a situation like that when you get Roxy to plug back into you? What do you notice about what happens with your other two dogs at that point?
Typically, it's, you know, once I can get Roxy plugged into me and then get her to settle down, it becomes much easier to get them to do the same. You know, she's got, because she has the most intense energy of all of them, it's like once I can ground her, then, you know, then automatically the energy level goes down and you can feel the intensity go down right away. And as a result, it's much easier to get the other two to also do the same. You know, now it does require quite a bit of myself expending a lot of energy to make that happen. You know, just to get them to engage. But you can definitely feel a huge shift once she's grounded and settled. It really is amazing, because when you get those dogs linked up, it really is, you know, when you've got two dogs, it really is like, it's not two dogs. I mean, the energy level is like exponential, you know, and then of course when you have three, it's that much more exponential, you know, and I always remember Kevin asking me, so why do you have three dogs again?
Yeah, well, you, like most people, aren't going to just, you know, ditch one or two of your dogs for the sake of ease or whatever. But it's, I think it's worth remembering that because, you know, that's like the system theory of change, where you change one thing in the system and the whole system changes. So it's great when people have more than one dog for them to be able to take individual time with each of their dogs and work with them. But equally as important to remember that if they are making a significant shift with one of the dogs, then that will ultimately impact the entire group as well.
Yeah, I've definitely seen and experienced that, you know, the, you know, it's, and you can see it right in front of your eyes happening. I mean, and you can feel the energy shifting, you know, as it's going on. You know, it's, once you change that one element, then everything changes. They all change. You know, they're, and it really is amazing how connected they become. You know, once they get into that, that sort of one mind, if you want to call it that, you know, where they become this one entity, they're, you know, then once you can remove one of the dogs energetically and get them to settle, it, you know, the shift that occurs within that system is pretty profound.
You're also part of that one dog, of course.
Right, exactly. I think that's one of the big things to keep in mind is that whatever you're projecting and whatever you're putting out there, it has a huge impact on how they're going to respond. I mean, when the energy gets as intense as it does when you've got like three dogs, and those situations do come up, no matter how much you try to mechanically control it, those situations do arise. But how you handle it and how you approach it, it's, that makes all the difference in the world. You know, and because in the past, before I went through all of this, those situations would trigger me, and I would get stressed and frustrated, and that would just add fuel to the fire. You know, and of course, in the dog's world, they're like, "Yeah, you're moving energy. Come join us." You know, but now, you know, those moments don't stress me out. They don't frustrate me because, you know, and this was a big obstacle for me to overcome. And something I overcame spending that time with Kevin was, in a sense, my fear and resistance of that energy moving. I was very resistant to it. And just experiencing it on a daily basis like that helped me overcome my fear of it. So now when I'm in those situations where that kind of stuff is going on, you know, I can still remain calm and centered so that they can feel me, you know, and so I can be the absorber of that energy instead of projecting more energy out, you know, and that does make a huge difference in the effect it has and the ability for the dog to respond to you, you know, and I think that's really important to keep in mind that, you know, all these techniques are great and, you know, and they do work, but it still ultimately comes from you, you know, that you have to be the one who embodies all these things in an energetic way and how you're feeling about everything so that they actually have the effect that the desired effect that you want them to have.
Yeah. So from your calm centered place, you can choose to go and yell at the UPS truck right along with your three dogs.
Right.
Why didn't you bring my box today?
Exactly.
my Amazon order should have shown up.
It's 3 days late. They promised it by Monday.
Well, Sang, it's been really great to talk, and I think it's probably important to let people know how they can connect with you. One obvious place that we mentioned at the very beginning is through the forum on Natural Dog Blog. But you also have your own website, which is honorthedog.com, right?
Yep, that's right. And that has a link to my blog, as well as my contact information for anyone who needs or wants to contact me.
Great. And you are, as I mentioned at the beginning, in the Seattle area. So if there are any listeners who are up in that neck of the woods, definitely get a hold of Seng, because I'm sure he'd be happy to help you in person with the issues that you're working on with your dogs.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Absolutely. That's what I'm here for.
All right. Awesome. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we sign off for the evening?
No, I think we covered quite a bit. I think people are probably, heard quite enough.
We didn't get to talk about Catholic school, but I'll save that for our next.
Yeah, that can be quite a long discussion, to say the least. It's taken a long time for me to get over my experiences there.
At Catholic place, right?
Yeah. No offense to Catholics everywhere.
Well, there's Catholics and then there's Catholic school.
Yes, exactly. And Catholic school is very different than Catholicism.
Yeah, well, that is a topic for a whole another conversation. But rather than going down that road, because I'll have to get my wife on the phone, because she did Catholic school from, kindergarten all the way up through graduating high school. So,
Okay.
She'd have a lot to say on that topic, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure we'd have a lot of great stories to exchange.
Next time.
Yep.
Well, thank you everyone for listening to this installment of Natural Dog Blog Radio. And thanks again, Seng, for joining us. My name is Neil Satin, your enthusiastic and wide awake host. And you can always find me on naturaldogblog.com as well. So thanks again, and we'll be talking to you soon.